This is KGNU's Morning Magazine for Wednesday, May 10th of 2023. I'm your host, Shannon Young. Coming up on today's program, we'll hear from a longtime journalist, originally from Boulder, who documented his journey on foot from Washington, D.C. to New York City. We'll have a preview of this weekend's Palestinian Cultural Day at the Museum of Boulder. Then Chris Moore has his weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You. And finally, herbalist Brigitte Mars will share her regular Wednesday feature, Naturally. A BBC News update and commentary from Jim Hightower are at the bottom of the hour. Then, John Kellen will present part two of KGNU's retrospective series, From the Archives to the Airwaves. Then at 9:30, Dee Ryder will be in the Boulder studio for the Morning Sound Alternative. That's all still ahead, but first, a look at the headlines with KGNU's Jack Armstrong.
Denver Mayor Michael Hancock approved late Tuesday afternoon another round of emergency resources to assist another influx of migrants that have newly arrived in the city since last week. The city will also activate its Emergency Operations Center starting Thursday, as an average of more than 200 migrants arrive daily from the border city of El Paso, Texas. That number may likely increase as pandemic-related immigration restrictions under Title 42 expire tomorrow, along with the federal government's public health emergency declaration. The Title 42 policy allowed U.S. border agents to quickly expel migrants, even those with legal asylum claims. The Title 42 policy allowed U.S. border agents to quickly expel migrants, even those with legal asylum claims. Denver officials say they anticipate an increase in arrivals as Title 42 ends, but not before Thursday. A dean at Denver's East High has issued his first comments since a student shot him in March. Pam Johnson has more.
East High Dean Wayne Mason told the Associated Press another student reported seeing the student shooter with a gun weeks prior to the incident, but the armed student fled school grounds during a search. A spokesperson for Denver Public Schools told the Associated Press the district has not been able to verify Mason's account yet. Mason said when the student arrived at the school on March 22nd, he asked for the assistant principal, who did not respond to radio requests by Mason and fellow dean Eric Sinclair. Mason said Sinclair then took the student to an office, where Sinclair continued to radio call the assistant principal and also a safety officer. Soon after, Mason said Sinclair radioed him for help, and when Mason entered the office, he saw the student and Sinclair wrestling. Within moments of Sinclair alerting him of a gun, the student fired at least two shots at both deans and kept the gun aimed at them while he fled the office. Accounts by police and school district leaders on the day of the incident said the student shot the two administrators while they conducted a pat-down on him in accordance with a school safety plan. They said the administrator who normally does the pat-downs was not available. For KGNU, I'm Pam Johnson.
Colorado has decided to continue prosecuting children as young as 10, despite a proposed bill that aimed to prevent such prosecutions for crimes other than murder. KGNU's Ryan Bigham has more.
Legislatures passed House Bill 1249 with last-minute changes on the final day of the session earlier this week. The bill originally aimed to prevent the prosecution of children under the age of 13 for all crimes except murder. The legislation would have instead channeled children who commit crimes into mentoring and therapeutic treatments called collaborative management programs. Proponents of the bill, like advocacy group Healthier Colorado, argued that these community programs would fill the gap in care for both the victim and the offender without having to arrest the offending child. Healthier Colorado CEO Jake Williams said that with the, quote, 11th-hour amendment in the Senate to remove the provision that raises the age of criminal prosecution from 10 to 13, politics went out over the interests of kids. A provision of the original bill that survived in the version passed by lawmakers includes a $1.5 million fund to build up Colorado's collaborative management programs. For KGNU, I'm Ryan Bigham.
Members of Boulder's Police Oversight Panel will vote today over whether or not to suspend operations. This comes after City Council voted last week to oust panel member Lisa Sweeney Murin. The Chief of Police and City Council have scrutinized Sweeney Murin's appointment based on her social media posts criticizing police, as well as her involvement with an ACLU lawsuit against Boulder Chief of Police Maris Herold. According to Boulder Beat News, the Boulder Police Union and Police Chief Maris Herold opposed Sweeney Murin's appointment to the panel. Panel co-chairs said the motion will be offered in recognition that the panel of diverse people has lost its confidence to safely, legally, and effectively conduct police oversight, and that the law requires significant revisions to rectify the issue. A study by Livability.com has ranked Fort Collins, Loveland, and Longmont as among the 25 best places to live in the West. Colorado Springs and Littleton also garnered top spots on the regional list. The study's focus centered on relocation decisions and affordability, while examining over 2,000 communities and using 50 data points. The publication study for the West region ranked Fort Collins as number 2, Longmont as number 22, and Loveland as number 25, with Salt Lake City taking top honors. As for weather today, the National Weather Service predicts showers and thunderstorms throughout the day, with severe storms possible after 4 p.m. The high today will be near 74 degrees. For KGNU, I'm Jack Armstrong.
You are listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. I'm your host, Shannon Young. If you received a grim cancer diagnosis and had spent months holed up in your home during the height of the COVID pandemic, what would you do? Well, author and longtime journalist Neil King Jr. decided to take a really long walk. He trekked on foot from his home in Washington, D.C. to New York City. King, who is originally from Boulder, documented his process from studying old trails, connecting New England cities, to the people he met along the way in a new book called American Ramble. He joins me in the studio this morning ahead of two local book presentations. Neil King, welcome to KGNU.
It's great to be here. Thanks, Shannon.
Well, I have to ask, you grew up in Boulder, and I'm wondering just how much did growing up here influence of all the things that you could do with the perspective shift that comes with a cancer diagnosis, you decided to take a really long hike.
You know, this is a very adventurous town. I grew up in a house where the Rocky Mountains were literally out the back door. You could walk forever. I walked everywhere as a kid, right? You would go Boulder Creek, Chautauqua, the whole thing. I mean, this is a walking and biking town. So it's pretty deep in the blood.
And in your book, you are meeting people along the way. This is, it slows down your perspective. It's not, how can I get from point A to point B the fastest? But it's a literal stop and smell the roses along the way type of story. I'm also wondering just how much being a journalist influenced your, hey, what are you doing? Tell me about this town way of taking this journey.
Yeah, you know, the whole point was not so much to notch things and let the story kind of unfold under my feet. And yeah, I met some amazing people along the way. And I got to see so much of our past and kind of meditate. You know, the great thing about it was just to give yourself a month, and I highly recommend people try to do this themselves, to just go out and think and not fill your ears with podcast stuff or music or whatever, and think about your time and our kind of collective time. And that's really what the book's about. It's a little bit of both of what do you do with your time on Earth and what are we to make of our story and our past. And there's so much of it just to be seen physically.
Oh, well, what are some of your very favorite moments from your journey?
You know, I one of the fantastic moments, I was walking in Lancaster County where the Amish and Mennonites are thick there. And I saw these kids playing softball where the girls were wearing these long floral dresses all the way to their ankles. And they were just incredible softball players. And after they played, they all came over to me and we engaged in a conversation, and their teacher was really enthusiastic about what I was doing. And then one of the kids stepped forward and he said, Mr. Weaver, what if we were to sing for Mr. King? And they all invited me into their schoolhouse got up on the riser and sang these incredible hymns. And it was just such a fantastic moment. They were really giving their thanks to me for having set out on this walk and stumbled into their playground and engaged with them. And so they sang to me in return, and it was just a magical moment.
And obviously, any kind of physical journey of this type requires some training beforehand and planning. Now, you knew that you were going to be walking long distances on a daily basis. Did you know you were going to write a book?
By the time I set out, I had planned to write a book. I'd done a lot of study. You know, I was going to walk out my door at the end of March of 2020, but you might remember a few things happened.
Yeah.
And so I delayed it exactly a year. And in the time in between, I had so much time to study everything in between. So I kind of left as a bit of a scholar about the land that I was going to cross. And I really was then at that point planning to write a book. And it made the whole experience a lot richer, the work I had done in advance.
Do you have any takeaways or ways that this journey kind of influenced your way to go about the world on a daily basis?
You know, I think for all of us, it's a constant struggle to go back and forth between the world that we know in front of us and then the world that we're being told about on television screens or Twitter or Facebook, which is often a much more ominous, darker place. And, you know, I'm not saying that world doesn't exist because there's a lot of dreadful things that are happening out there. But during this month, I said I'm only going to base my judgment about what's going on by what I see day to day. And that's just a starkly different world. And there was a magic about that spring and about that stretch of time that sticks in my mind and always kind of will in a sort of fable-like quality, you know. And I think it's just good for any of us to take the time away from all the hubbub, a lot of it being negative, kind of divisive hubbub, and just go out and ponder the immediacy of the surroundings, you know.
Neil King, you are going to be presenting your book, American Ramble, tonight at the Boulder Brick Bookstore at 6:30. And you're also going to be speaking at Tattered Cover tomorrow. Can you tell listeners a bit more about what to expect?
Yeah, I mean, at both events, I'm going to talk about how these things are, my idea of a ramble and what I did is very much available to anybody. And it's, it's a very unusual stretch of time to just say I'm going to step out of my ordinary rounds, walk out my own front door, and cover a stretch of territory in my state that's significant to me, like a pilgrimage, you know, going to a place that's meaningful after having put a lot of thought into it. And, that's the book I wrote, American Ramble. And I think it, a lot of the people that I know who have read it or readers who have come to me have said it gave them an unexpected sense of sort of positive, almost sort of patriotic feel, I think, that a lot of people have struggled to have these days.
Neil King will be at the Boulder Bookstore tonight at 6:30 p.m. and at the McGregor Square location of Tattered Cover tomorrow at 6 p.m. Thank you so much for coming into the studio today.
Shannon, fantastic. I thank you for having the time.
The Palestinian city of Nablus is one of Boulder's sister cities. The Museum of Boulder is hosting a celebration of Palestinian culture this Saturday. KGNU's Elena Claver spoke with festival organizer Julia Hallaby about what's planned for this year's event.
It's a festival celebrating Palestinian culture in general. Last year's event ended up being a huge hit. We had over 300 people in attendance, and this festival is really geared towards people who don't know a lot about Palestinian or Arab culture. It's an immersive experience and a great opportunity to experience many aspects of Palestinian culture, but it's also wonderful for Palestinians and Arabs to experience a celebration of their culture when their experience in America is often feeling very much like they're in the shadows.
And what is going to be at the event?
Jerusalem Cafe and maybe a few others are donating food. So there'll be yummy Arabic food on site, as well as music, headed up by Palestinian-born Katrine Melshi, and she'll lead us in some Debki lessons. So there'll be a chance to dance, and there'll be a Bedouin tent that will be erected with an opportunity to take photographs. There'll be some costumes that people can put on if they wish. There'll also be a henna artist, and we have a whole activities area for all ages, which will include learning to write your name in Arabic or learn some Arabic calligraphy. You can make a button station where you can create freedom posters. Merchandise from both Nablus and Beit Umar for sale, as well as Habawi kafiyas, the traditional scarf. Habawi is the last factory still operating in Palestine, and it's also located in Hebron. We have fabulous speakers this year. We'll have Iman Joda, who's Colorado's first Muslim and Palestinian state legislator, as well as our mayor, Aaron Brockett.
I went last year and it was so amazing. Will it be upstairs on the roof again?
Yes. The music, the food, the vending, the speeches will all be up on the roof. The activities area and the Bedouin tent will be in the saloon area. The saloon is a current exhibit the museum's running all summer long. It's a mock-up of an old West saloon. And as well as the lodge space of the Dushanbe Tea House will be filled with artifacts. So we've got a really astounding collection of traditional Palestinian dresses called thobes. Lots of examples of amazing embroidery in Arabic called tatris, and wonderful posters that will all be on display. So it's a cultural display with antiques and common products found in Palestine, so that participants can just really soak in all that is Palestinian culture.
Well, Julia Halaby, thank you so much, and we'll see you there.
Yes, we're so excited. We hope you can come.
We go now to Chris Moore's weekly commentary, Make Them Hear You.
Make them hear you.
This is Make Them Hear You with ideas on how you can have your voice heard before Congress. The standoff continues over raising the nation's borrowing limit. If they can't come to an agreement, the government could be required by the 14th Amendment to continue issuing new debt to pay the government's obligations. The 14th Amendment states that, quote, the validity of the public debt of the United States authorized by law shall not be questioned, close quote. Does the 14th Amendment override the statutory borrowing limit that requires congressional approval? In intense debate, people say it could avert a total global economic meltdown, but borrowing costs are likely to soar in the meantime, since buyers of T-bonds would be risking a Supreme Court case that could invalidate the U.S. debt. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen warned that without action, the government will run out of cash as soon as June 1st. House Republicans have refused to raise or suspend the debt ceiling unless Biden accepts deep spending cuts in his signature programs. So a group of legal scholars is advocating for a constitutional challenge to the borrowing limit. Garrett Epps, a constitutional scholar, says that, quote, the Constitution's text bars the federal government from defaulting on the debt, even a little, even for a short while. There's a case to be made that if Congress decides to default on the debt, the president has the power and the obligation to pay it without congressional permission, even if that requires borrowing more money to do so, close quote. But Georgetown University's Anita S. Krishnakumar wrote, quote, the statute is a necessary component of Congress's power to borrow, close quote. For now, Biden is insisting Congress must increase the debt ceiling. But it's an open question what Biden would have Treasury do if Congress does not raise the limit in time, because the Constitution gives Congress the power to tax and spend. Moody's analytics economist Mark Zandi modeled a situation where the Supreme Court decides in favor of the 14th Amendment supremacy and found it would create short-term economic damage but long-term gains by removing the threat of future debt brinkmanship. During the 1995 budget standoff, Bill Clinton said he would use the 14th Amendment, quote, without hesitation and force the courts to stop me, close quote. Law professor Neil H. Buchanan has made the case for invoking the 14th Amendment for over a decade. Constitutionally, the government, quote, can't do anything that undermines confidence in the validity of the public debt. Buchanan said if the president can't borrow, he must cut spending, a violation of his constitutional duty to spend congressional appropriations. The president can't raise taxes unilaterally to continue paying those bills either. Continuing to borrow is, quote, the least damaging choice. A former critic of Buchanan's arguments, Harvard's Lawrence Tribe, has switched sides and now says, quote, if Congress fails to raise the debt limit, executive action to avoid default arguably violates Congress's exclusive power of the purse, but it is the lesser of two constitutional evils, close quote. If you have thoughts on raising the debt limit and the 14th Amendment, you can contact your senators, representative, and President Biden. This is Chris Moore with Make Them Hear You.
It's now time to check in with herbalist Brigitte Mars, who brings us her weekly episode of Naturally.
Greetings. Welcome to Naturally. This is Brigitte Mars. We've all been hearing about the demise of the bees. And you know, the bees do so much for us. They pollinate 3 out of every 4 bites of food that we eat. And not only do the bees work so hard to make honey, I think it's kind of a ripoff that they're given sugar water in its place during the winter. That could be part of the problem. But maybe we can help by planting things that are great pollinators for the bees. So you can attract bees to your garden. They love blue and purple flowers, catnip, chamomile, fennel. You know, you could just scatter some flax seeds out there, and those beautiful blue flowers are great pollination for the bees. Hyssop. One of my favorites is lemon balm. And if you're a beginning gardener, lemon balm will certainly boost your gardening confidence. It comes back every year. It's a member of the mint family. It's said that if you rub some lemon balm inside your beehive or mason hive, it'll attract the bees. And of course, you can eat the lemon balm. It's available as a pesto if you grind it up. I like to put some sprigs of lemon balm in my water bottle, and you can make tea out of it. It's good for ADHD and hyperactivity and depression. Wow. You can plant sunflowers. You might want to think about having things all year round so that the bees are going to have some access to pollinators. They have, at least some bees have long tongues. They love honeysuckle. They love daisies and asters. And hollyhocks are another one of my favorite flowers. If you're planting hollyhocks, the single flower are going to be a lot easier for the bees to access than the double flower. So bees can't see red. They are going to prefer purple, blue, white, and yellow flowers. And they tend to prefer native plants over non-natives, smart bees that they are. So we might want to think about growing things that don't need a lot of water so that we're conserving water all the time. And of course, not only do the bees give us honey, but they also provide pollen, which can be a medicine for people that have allergies. And propolis is super antimicrobial. The bees collect resin from the trees and use it to keep infection from going into the hive. So be a friend of the bees, really. They are so awesome. Thanks for joining me, Brigitte Mars, on Naturally.
The sounds of some traditional Palestinian music to take us out today. Again, the Museum of Boulder will be holding its Palestinian Cultural Day Festival this Saturday. Thank you for joining us on today's Morning Magazine. I've been your host, Shannon Young. Special thanks to Jack Armstrong, Ryan Bigham, Pam Johnson, Eli Kalin, Alexis Kenyon, Elena Claver, Chris Moore, Brigitte Mars, and author Neil King for their contributions to today's program. A reminder that if you'd like to share a comment with KGNU about something you heard, give us a call at 303-447-9911. We play the messages back on Tuesdays during the Morning Magazine. Stay tuned for the latest commentary from Jim Hightower, then our retrospective series, From the Archives to the Airwaves. But first, we're going to hear a couple of messages and then the headlines from the BBC.